Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad. On Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit, Motown. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Back in this new edition of Not So Mad Science, we were on 2 weeks ago, and once again, the net result of that show is that Blog Talk Radio is having issues, they say. Well, maybe they could be blocking us. I can't say for sure which is the case. What I do know is the show that I will be doing tonight, I was supposed to do and had scheduled for last week. But nothing will deter me from serving and helping my leader, my teacher, and my guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Christ in our presence today, in his mission to serve the people, the black man and woman here in the wilderness of North America, as he has been charged to do and has shared that burden with us of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, the exalted Christ, the God in our presence today, who is in power and on the wheel. We're going to open tonight's program, which is, and I'll just put it this way, our world is changing, and it's changing in ways we are unprepared for. So I want to open tonight's program with the words from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and we will close out with the sciences of the mind, plastic pollution in our food, biochemistry, cancer research, astronomy, and last but not least, my science of sciences, close out with the science of physics. These things can no longer be ignored. And in those immortal words of my Father, our Father, who art and is in heaven and in power, prophecy must be fulfilled. And I paraphrase, fear not, for prophecy also can be exceeded. With all the horrors we see in the streets and in the world today, and wars still yet unheard of, we live with danger inside our own homes. The sciences will allow us and give us insights and an opportunity to heed the warnings of the warner, and the reminder of the comforter that we can prevail. And this is Not So Mad Science with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan with these words about, or the truth about, the war in Palestine.
While I was being quiet, Honorable Elijah Muhammad did something, and I'll start telling you about it now. In the middle of the night, I received a picture of the Prime Minister of Israel. Big picture. And he wanted me to study that man. Down in the corner of the picture, he was there with some of the members of his war cabinet. But I didn't know what they were talking about or whatnot. So a day passed, and he brought back the picture, but enlarged it that I could see the Prime Minister talking with members of his war cabinet. They had drinks in their hand and wine. They were toasting the Jews that lived near Gaza, who would die a few days later on October the 7th when Hamas broke through and a lot of killing started. Mr. Netanyahu knew all about it. Listen to me good. I let the media in because I want you to hear it. He already knew what Hamas was going to do because he sanctioned it. I want you to pay me good attention. And they were proposing a toast to the Jews who lived outside of the walls of Gaza that separated the Gazans from the Israelis. And they were posting this toast. I had pictures. My brother found it of Netanyahu. Yoav Gallant, the Minister of Defense. And there were two more members of his war cabinet that were toasting. They were toasting the innocence of Jews that on the 7th of October would be martyred. And they were being martyred because he knew their plans. And he used their plans to help Hamas do what it did. Because he had in his mind a second Nakba. The first Nakba or catastrophe on the Palestinians was done in 1948 when Israel became a state and they exiled 700,000 Palestinians and made them like vagabonds in the earth. But he had in mind, Netanyahu, he was going to use pain of their loss to destroy the whole Palestinian, not only in Gaza, but the West Bank.
And now Netanyahu is facing fresh criticism from the U.S. over new plans for the West Bank.
East Jerusalem. It was a genocidal attack that he knew would preserve his place as a Jewish leader.
I need you, dear brothers and sisters, to understand critically what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said. The attack on Israel did not happen in a vacuum. It was not something that was snuck up upon them. They knew, and they facilitated to ensure that it would happen. So this genocide
against the Palestinian people, bombing hospitals, places of escape that they planned and directed the people, the citizenry, the non-combatants to go to, then bomb that route that you told them was a safe route to go out. Now I want to share some more wisdom from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's going to be speaking with respect to the Ummah, the, as some would say, the body Christ. The Ummah is the body of the people, the community. Yes, Ramadan has passed, but the Ummah of the people is still present.
أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد مَنَّ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ أَشْهَدُ أَنَّ مُحَمَّدًا رَسُولُ اللَّهِ هَيَّا اللَّهُ حيا الصلاة حيا الصلاة الصلاة خير من النوم الصلاة خير من النوم الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين
I mean. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, beneficent the merciful. I bear witness there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. As-salamu alaykum, my dear brothers and sisters, and once again, Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan.
This is your brother, Abdul Mutakir Muhammad, welcoming you to the Ummah Reflects, our humble prayer line here in North America. We thank Allah for each and every one of you, and we thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us this morning. And we pray that Allah will bless us to make this our greatest Ramadan ever. We pray that Allah will guide the words of every speaker that comes on this line this month. We thank Allah and we pray Allah will bless our guest speaker this morning and to take us further into our program and give us our historic perspective and start us off and introduce our guest speaker. It'll be our brother and friend, Brother Jamil Muhammad. Brother Jamil.
As-salamu alaykum. Can you hear me, dear Brother Mudakir?
Wa alaykum salam. I hear you loud and clear, sir.
All praise is due to Allah. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I greet you, my dear beloved Muslims, in the greetings of peace and paradise. We say, As-salamu alaykum. And I, like you, Brother Mutakir, am thankful to be alive and present for day one of the holy month of Ramadan in the year 2024 by the Gregorian calendar. And so many things are happening that I'll move through this brief historic perspective because we are all gathered to hear from the man of the hour this morning, as we should be. This is our 18th consecutive year, believe it or not, 18 years since this prayer line was initiated back in the old days by our sister, Dr. Nisa Islam Muhammad, who is our founder and whose idea and brainchild this was and has been and continues to be. We're very grateful to Dr. Nisa Muhammad, to Minister Akbar, to you, Brother Mutakir, to Brother Shahid, the tech team, the brothers and sisters all over the country that make this happen. But any time 18 years have gone by, you've put in some work. Our principal speaker this morning, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, has been on with us, according to Sister Nisa, by 15 years. All praise is due to Allah for the consistent leadership, guidance, and counsel of this great and beautiful brother of ours, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So I'm humbled and honored to be back in the Assembly of the Believers one more time. It's a great honor indeed for me to be in the presence of the man for whom I thank Allah, my teacher, our brother, and our true friend, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In presenting our beloved, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, this morning, might I remind you that we are hearing vital, essential guidance in times of unprecedented peril and danger all over the globe. And so now, as we direct our attention on the Ramadan prayer line, the Ummah Reflects, for Ramadan 2024, let us direct our attention to the man for whom we have come to hear this morning, our beloved brother. And it is my honor to call his name once again and to hear his voice by Allah's permission once again. My beloved and yours, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Dear beloved brother minister.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, sir. You sound beautiful.
As well, you sound beautiful also. I'm honored
beyond words to have this opportunity to once again bear witness to the greatness of Allah, to bear witness to the greatness of his prophetic community and Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. For he is the root of Islam in the world. He is the eternal door to Prophet Muhammad. And without his noble example, there would be no Islam as we know it. But I am also honored to represent Al-Mahdi, the one who was prophesied to come to our beloved world of Islam to guide us back to his straight path. Because it is clear that many of us, though well-intended, have lost our way. And we are in need of a guide. And when Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that the sun would rise from the west in the latter day, it did not mean that the actual sun would reverse its course and rise from the west, but it does signify that guidance and light to reinvigorate the Ummah throughout the world would start in the West. So the great Mahdi, Master Fard Muhammad, came to North America by himself and was among us for 20 years before he made himself known to one from among us who would become his messenger, Messiah, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. I thank Allah that he's allowing me to represent Al-Mahdi and to represent the one whom he raised and gave the wisdom of a weighty work and taught him the meaning of every prophecy that is found in the Quran and in the Bible, which makes him the master teacher that is going to unite us into one Ummah, one great community of believers. And he gave the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to us as the minister of Islam. And he taught Elijah Muhammad for 3 years and 4 months, night and day. And when he was leaving, he said to Elijah Muhammad, "You don't need me anymore." The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, "Oh, yes, dear Master, I do need you. the Savior didn't say any more, but time showed that what he put in Elijah Muhammad as guidance for us, it took 40 years for him to fully understand that aspect of his mission. And then he summoned me as Moses asked Allah to give him a helper out of his family, remove the knot from his tongue, expand his breast, and make Aaron share tasks. And now it is my 43rd or 44th year absent my teacher. And we have come to a time so difficult in the world. And so I say to all of you, Ramadan Mubarak, a blessed Ramadan. I wanted to say to us, there's more to our fast than not eating or drinking during the daylight hours or having relations with our wives and husbands. There is an obligation that Allah gives to us when we fast. The word Mubarak comes from baraka, which signifies the continuance forever of the blessings which a thing possesses and from which extensive good flows. It possesses the sense of firmness, continuity, steadiness, abundance of good, exaltation, collection, and blessings. And the answer comes back from the believer, Ramadan Kareem. That word Kareem comes from the Arabic root karama, meaning to be productive, generous, noble, precious, valuable, honorable, to overcome anyone in generosity, to be high-minded, beneficent, noble, illustrious, fruitful, kind, worthy of respect, fair, or holy. I would like to, in this sacred month, ask us to consider what is going on in our world. In Palestine, our beloved family is making their prayers near the rubble of their destroyed homes. They're struggling to find a piece of bread or a drink of clean water. They're dying from famine. They're dying from injuries that were inflicted by the bombing campaign and the destruction of the hospitals so that those who are wounded are walking or laying down with their wounds and no real care because the hospitals are almost without anything to treat the sick and the wounded. Oh, beloved Muslims, what kind of Ramadan will this be for us if we, during iftar, enjoy our family and friends and reach over and eat a date, reach over and have a bowl of soup and food? How can we enjoy the blessing of food and drink without a thought of our people around the world in war zones that cannot find anything to eat? This is going on now in Haiti. This is going on now in the Sudan, in other parts of Africa, in other parts of Asia. Everywhere we look, the people are rising against the wickedness of their leadership. Leadership that is not leading according to the will of God, even in our Muslim world. Some of the leaders are so afraid that war will destroy beauty of the cities that they have built with the wealth of oil that Allah has blessed them to have. I'm asking us to think of those who have nothing. Don't have a Ramadan where you eat, but you're not checking to see who's eating. Just where you live, next door, around the corner. This Ramadan will be the best Ramadan if the fast makes us concern others who have nothing to eat and no water to drink. I'm asking us as Muslims to rise to the command of God. I'm asking the Muslim Ummah during this Ramadan, don't partake of the joy of it without thinking about those of the Muslim community who have nothing to eat, no water to drink, no hospital to go to, living in tents. And Israel says there will be no for Ramadan because you have not let all the hostages go. So Mr. Netanyahu says, I am going to attack Rafah. He said he has to do this because if he doesn't attack Rafah, they will lose the war because Toba the 7th started from the southern part of the Gaza Strip, and he is hell-bent on destroying it completely. What should we do in the face of a beast in human form? How should we react? Can the Muslim world believe that Allah is going to bless them in this Ramadan if in this Ramadan they don't give a thought or a prayer for our beloved Muslims in Palestine and in the West Bank, in Gaza, in other parts of the world? Allah is plaguing the earth because he intends to set down every tyrant. None will lead the human family with their corrupt minds and hearts and their non-thinking for the little man, the poor man, the man that's in the dust. What good are we as Muslims if our fast of Ramadan doesn't give us a greater sense of what it is to be hungry? What good are we as Muslims if we don't try to do good for those who have nothing? We thank Allah that we have something to eat, but if we don't feel the pain of others who are suffering at this very moment, then this, as I said on Savior's Day, is a test for us. Because if we don't feel their pain, if we don't cry when they cry out to Allah to give them food, I've heard some of them say death is sweeter. Because a mother can't feed her child. Babies are dying and mothers are holding their babies and screaming out. And we are planning days of enjoyment. I'm not trying to make you upset. But if what is happening does not make us upset, we are very, very sick. And it soon will be at our door, since we don't feel the hurt of others and rise to do something about it, then Allah will take our blessing away, and famine will stretch from one end of the earth to another. War will stretch from one end of the earth to another. Bombs will fall, and even nuclear weapons will be used. This is the war of Armageddon, and Allah himself is leading the war. None shall escape what God is intending when he removes the wicked from the face of the earth and sets up a government of universal peace based on truth and justice. Beloved Muslims, I thank Allah that he allowed me to come on the broadcast this morning. I thank Allah. I miss the voice of my brother Akbar, but I'm happy to hear the voice of my dear brother Jamil. I pray that this will be a great month of fasting and prayer and sacrifice. What can we do? I say and ask in the name of Allah, the great Mahdi, and in the name of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Muslim world during Ramadan, focus and stands as a united ummah and says to Israel, you must stop. You will stop, or Allah will stop you. I warn you, Netanyahu. Your days are limited. And Israel will not be happy with the chastisement of Allah, and neither will we as believers be upset when Allah's chastisement reaches our door. I thank you for listening to me. I thank you for thinking about what we are asking of you in this Ramadan. The whole idea of fasting is to expand our hearts, expand our breasts, to think of those less fortunate. That's what nation raised among men. Because we enjoy good and we forbid the evil and the corruption that is in our world of Islam has to be removed. And all tyrants set down. The people must have justice and truth, and they must have leadership that is not corrupted by the desire of material things, leadership that is willing to suffer with those who suffer. I pray that our ummah will rise. I pray that we will inspire the nations of Islam, inspire Mecca to take the lead and call every nation of Islam, call them to rise and stand firm against the suffering of our fellow believing brothers and even those who are not Muslims who are suffering the pain of war, poverty, hunger. That we will do our part. Thank you, Allah, for giving me these words. Thank you, dear believers, for listening to your brother. Thank you for rising to pray. Thank you for rising to fast. Thank you for rising against our own personal weaknesses to stand firm on what Ramadan means. So I say it again, Ramadan Mubarak and Ramadan Kareem. Thank you, my dear Ummah. As-salam alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Wa alaykum salam, dear.
That was the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Though Ramadan itself has passed, his words pierce through us this very moment as we take note of the world environment throughout the college campuses, just as during Vietnam and around the globe. The student collegiate population is speaking out against the war in Palestine. The body Christ around the world is stepping up and speaking out against Israel and the war and the way they are conducting themselves in this war of genocide in Palestine. But I'm going to remind us by replaying as we open. We were told in advance what was coming, and now we know the truth. So let me remind us over these next 5 minutes of what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan told us.
While I was being quiet, Honorable Elijah Muhammad did something, and I'll start telling you about it now. In the middle of the night, I received a picture of the Prime Minister of Israel. Big picture. And he wanted me to study that man. Down in the corner of the picture, he was there with some of the members of his war cabinet. But I didn't know what they were talking about or whatnot. So a day passed and he brought back the picture but enlarged it that I could see the Prime Minister talking with members of his war cabinet. They had drinks in their hand and wine. They were toasting the Jews that lived near Gaza, who would die a few days later on October the 7th when Hamas broke through and a lot of killing started. Mr. Netanyahu knew all about it. Listen to me good. Let the media in because I want you to hear it. He already knew what Hamas was going to do because he sanctioned it. I want you to pay me good attention. And they were proposing a toast to the Jews who lived outside of the walls of Gaza that separated the Gazans from the Israelis. And they were posting this toast. I had pictures. My brother found it of Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, Minister of Defense, and there were two more members of his war cabinet that were toasting. They were toasting the innocence of Jews
that on the 7th of October would be martyred. And they were being martyred because he knew their plans. And he used their plans to help Hamas do what it did. Because he had in his mind a second Nakba. The first Nakba or catastrophe on the Palestinians was done in 1948 when Israel became a state and they exiled 700,000 Palestinians and made them like vagabonds in the earth. But he had in mind, Netanyahu, he was going to use pain of their loss to destroy the whole Palestinian.
And now Netanyahu is facing fresh criticism from the U.S. over new plans for the West Bank.
East Jerusalem. It was a genocidal attack that he knew would preserve his place as a Jewish leader.
And that
was being quiet.
Is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We're going to take a short break, very short break, but we got to pay the bills, with a piece from Sam Cooke pertinent about today. A change is going to come. Yes, a change is going to come, and yes, a change has come. Recently, in the world of science, Harvard scientists believe they have discovered a surprising hidden catalyst in human brain evolution. There's a new study which suggests that the evolution of the human brain's increased size may be attributed to the consumption of fermented foods, offering an alternative to the theory that cooking was the key driver. This dietary shift likely provided the necessary nutrition to support larger brains, with implications for future research in human health and evolution. The study hypothesizes that predigestive foods contributed to the development of larger brains. The large, capable human brain is a marvel of evolution. But how it evolved from a smaller primate brain into the creative complex organ of today has been a mystery. These scientists believe they can pinpoint when our evolutionary ancestors evolved larger brains. And this is where my understanding of the science of the mind and these so-called experts on evolution split. Their contention is that we are an evolved primate, monkeys, baboons, chimpanzees, evolving up because of the size of our brains. This so-called evolution of the ancestral primate brain evolved larger brains, which roughly tripled in size as human ancestors evolved from the bipedal primates known as Australopithecus. But why it happened and when did it happen? According to their understanding of evolution, they want to determine or tell us what spurred that change. That change has remained elusive because that change did not take place from the lower primates. God did not begin as a primate. So why do they believe this happened? When did it happen? Where did it happen? What spurred this change? Some have theorized that the use of fire and the subsequent invention of cooking gave our ancestors enough nourishment for our larger brained ancestors to become dominant. A new theory points to a different spark, fermentation. Well, beer and some other spirits are a fermented food source, carbohydrates. Brain tissue is metabolically expensive, according to human evolutionary brain biologist and professor. This professor says it requires a lot of calories to keep it running. And in most animals, having enough energy just to survive is a constant problem. For larger brain Australopithecus to survive, therefore, something must have changed in their diet. Really? Was it just diet? Or is man, created man, the evolutionary product of an evolving God? Because it says in Scripture, he looked into himself and saw another person and brought this person forward, for he was alone. He was alone. And he brought this other person out of himself to have companionship. She became his second self. These theories put forward include in what these human ancestors, they believe, consumed, or most popularly believe that the discovery of cooking allowed them to garner more usable calories, and this is what spurred the developmental change in their brain because of how they ate. But the problem with this theory is that the earliest evidence places the use of fire at approximately 1.5 million years ago, significantly later than the development of the Caucasoid humanoid brain. They believe that our ancestors' cranial capacity began increasing 2.5 million years ago, as opposed to the 1.5 million years of this cooking theory. Dr. Catherine L. Bryant, one of the authors of this paper and currently a researcher at the Institute for Language, Communication, and the Brain in Aix-Marseille University in France, she believes some other dietary change must have been releasing metabolic constraints on brain size, and fermentation seemed like it could fit the bill. So they're reaching for something outside of God's influence and direction as to why man is man, and the primates, of which man is not, is the evolutionary root. Charles Darwin tried and failed. Why are we now still trying to go backwards to give existence to what God put forward? So whatever changed in these people's diets had nothing to do, or it may have had something to do with the growth of the primate brain, but that never equaled the size of the God-made brain of which man only has. So fermentation being a new perspective on brain growth, drink as much fermented liquids as you like. Eat as much fermented foods as you like. It may grow your brain. But increased capacity does not beget increased intellect. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. So, as we close this out, we go to another science of the mind where a first-of-its-kind signal was detected in the human brain. Another group of scientists have identified a unique form of cell messaging occurring in the human brain, revealing just how much we still have to learn about how mysterious the brain and its inner workings are. Excitingly, the discovery hints that our brains might be even more powerful units of computation than we originally theorized and realized. Back in 2020, researchers from institutes in Germany and Greece reported a mechanism in the brain's outer cortical cells that produced a novel graded signal all on its own, one that could provide individual neurons with another way to carry out their logical functions. by measuring the electrical activity in the sections of tissue removed during surgery on epileptic patients and analyzing their structure using fluorescent microscopy, the neurologist found individual cells in the cortex could not just be the unusual sodium ions to fire, but calcium as well. This combination of positivity, charged ions, kicked off waves of voltage that had never been seen before in the study of the brain. They are referred to as calcium-mediated dendritic action potentials, or DCAPs. Brains, especially those of the human variety, are often compared to computers. The analogy has its limits, but on some levels, they perform tasks in similar ways. These brains are not the equal of or the evolutionary product of a primate root. Both they use the power of an electrical voltage to carry out various operations. In computers, it is the form of a rather simple flow of electrons through intersections called transistors. In neurons, the signal is in the form of a wave of opening and closing channels that exchange charged particles such as sodium, chloride, and potassium. Of flowing ions is called an action potential. Instead of transistors, neurons manage these messages chemically at the end of branches called dendrites. The dendrites are central to understanding the brain because they are at the core of what determines the computational power of single neurons. Humboldt University neuroscientist Matthew Larkham told Walter Beckwith at the American Association for the Advancement of Science back in January of 2020. Dendrites are the traffic lights of our nervous system. If an action potential is significant enough, it can be passed on to other nerves, which can block or pass on the message. This is the logical underpinnings of our brain, ripples of voltage that can be communicated collectively in two forms, either in AND message, if X and Y are triggered, the message is passed on, or an OR message, if X or Y is triggered, the message is passed on. Arguably, nowhere in this is this more complex than in the dense, wrinkled outer section of the human central nervous system, the cerebral cortex. The deeper second and third layers are especially thick, packed with branches that carry out higher order functions we associate with sensation, thought, and motor control. It was tissues from these layers that researchers took a close look at, hooking up cells to a device called a somatodendritic patch clamp to send active potentials up and down each neuron, recording their signals. There was a eureka moment when we saw the dendritic action potentials for the first time, said Dr. Larkham. To ensure any discoveries weren't unique to people with epilepsy, they double-checked their results in a handful of samples taken from brain tumors. While the team had carried out similar experiments on rats, the kind of signals they observed buzzing through the human cells were very different. More importantly, when they dosed the cells with a sodium channel blocker called tetrodotoxin, they still found a signal. Only by blocking calcium did all fall quiet. Finding an action potential mediated by calcium is interesting enough, but modeling the way this sensitive new kind of signal worked in the cortex revealed a surprise. In addition to the logical and or type functions, these individual neurons could act as exclusive or XOR intersections, which only permitted a signal when other signal is graded in a particular fashion. Traditionally, the exclusive OR operation has been thought to require a network solution, the researchers wrote. More work needs to be done to see how DCAPs behave across entire neurons in a living system, not to mention whether it's a human thing or if similar mechanisms have evolved elsewhere in the animal kingdom. Technology is also looking to our own nervous system for inspiration, how to develop better hardware. Knowing our own individual cells, C-E-L-L-S, have a few more tricks up their sleeves could lead to new ways to network transistors. Exactly how this new logic tool squeezed into a single nerve cell translates into higher functions is a question for future researchers to answer. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Media Radio Network. Let us jump now into the world of ecology, the environment, and the dangers we face in our environment. And I'll preface it with this: if Nixon knew, Ag knew, and you'll understand what I mean as I go further. Microplastics have been found in sediment layers untouched by modern humans. So in the last 1,000 years, plastic is showing up in layers of soil that no human being has touched in over 1,000 years. Sounds like a dirty mess. Microplastics. They're in everything from our bodies to the ocean. And apparently they've even been found in sediment layers that date back as early as the first half of the 1700s, showing microplastics' pernicious ability to infiltrate even environments untouched by modern humans. A team of European researchers made this alarming discovery after studying the sediment layers in three lakes in Latvia, as detailed in a study published in the Journal of Science Advances. The scientists were studying lake sediments to test if the presence of microplastic in geological layers would be a reliable indicator for the beginning of the Anthropocene epoch, defined in the study as starting in 1950 and meant to delineate when humans started having a large impact on our environment. Well, this beast has been having an impact on our environment and pushed the edge of the modern impact into the past, into the layers of sediment. Scientists have long used layers of ash or ice to study past events on the Earth, leading to the question of whether microplastics can serve as a reliable chronological marker for the Anthropocene epoch. Clearly not, according to this study and this research, which found microplastics in every layer of sediment they dredged up, including one from 1733. And I quote, "We conclude that interpretations of microplastic distribution in the studied sediment profiles is ambiguous and does not strictly indicate the beginning of the Anthropocene epoch," the scientists wrote. Thus, they titled this section, "The Trash Planet." Other than the study concluding that microplastics are a poor marker of a geological age, it also shows microplastics' remarkable ability to get absolutely everywhere. Not even Antarctica, the most remote region on our planet, is immune. Scientists have found microplastic in several snow samples, having seemingly arrived there by the wind. Perhaps most alarmingly, scientists have even found microplastics inside our own organs, which researchers can only start to grapple with this deleterious impact. Going forward, one of the biggest challenges we face is to how to get rid of microplastics from our environment. Researchers are beginning to look at novel approaches ranging from planting birch trees in polluted soil to water filters. Judging from the ubiquity of microplastics and our ongoing addiction to plastic products, one thing is for sure, it won't be easy. But let us continue. It doesn't stop there. There's even plastic in the clouds. Scientists have uncovered 5 new places where plastic should not be, but is. On the top of Mount Everest, the tallest mountain above ground, above sea level on the planet, to the Mariana Trench, the deepest known place on the planet, in the human placenta and baby feces, plastics are everywhere. They are built to last, and last they do. A plastic bag can endure 20 years in the environment, and a disposable diaper, soiled or not, up to 200 years. When they do finally break down into microplastics, something that delineates being smaller than 1 micrometer, or about 1/70th the diameter of a human hair, they can become difficult to detect. These microplastics are so ubiquitous in the environment that some scientists think we should track down how they cycle through the global oceans, at the atmosphere, and soil, much in the same way we track carbon and phosphorus. Though soil, wind, and water, they even get into our food, scientists have found microplastics in beef, honey, salt particles, and most of the proteins we consume, everything from seafood to sirloin steak, and even plant-based meat alternatives. We keep looking for plastics, and we keep finding them in new and surprising places. Below 5% discoveries that expand our knowledge of our planet, plastic footprint. Clouds. Researchers recently collected 28 samples of liquid from clouds at the top of Mount Tai in eastern China. They found microplastic fibers from clothing, packaging, or tires in their samples. Lower altitude clouds contain more particles. The older plastic particles, some of which attract elements like lead, oxygen, and mercury, could lead to more cloud development, according to a paper published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology Letters. Rocks! Have you heard of plastic stones? That's the name scientists have given to a new type of sedimentary rock formed when molten plastic from burning trash cools down and fuses with materials from the environment. These plastitones have now been found in 11 countries on 5 continents. They can wreak havoc on microbial communities, especially in the ocean, where the rocks may be mistaken for algae. They could also reshape the geological record of our planet. Bottled water. Scientists recently found that on average, a liter of bottled water contains around 240,000 detectable plastic fragments, 10 to 100 times greater than previous estimates. Their research, published in the journal PNAS, focused on the tiniest plastic particles, nanoplastics. These particles can cross into the brain, the gut, the heart, and through the placenta to babies in utero. Farm fertilizers. We're making progress on the circular waste economy by using treated sewage sludge as a fertilizer. But that sludge has now been found to be packed with microplastics. A study in the journal Environmental Pollution estimates that the particles of spreading sludge on agricultural land could potentially make them one of the largest global reservoirs of microplastic pollution. Glaciers. You might think of the glaciers of Antarctica as some of the last wild and pristine places on Earth. But scientists recently found plastics there for the first time in the remote Collins Glacier on King George Island, probably brought in by the gusty winds. Plastics in glaciers and sea ice could increase the rate at which they melt because plastics absorb more heat than ice does. Our results also show that plastic pollution, even if only in small quantities, reaches remote areas with few human settlements. This is not so mad science. They have poisoned, as Marvin would say, they poisoned the land and the sea and the air that we breathe. This is not so mad science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. But we're still not done with plastics. Scientists supposedly have developed innovative techniques to transform plastic waste into a powerful clean fuel. and it could be produced for free. Batteries. Electric vehicles have become, and I'll use this word again, ubiquitous. And more people have realized how much less pollution they produce than traditional gasoline-powered cars. But another type of so-called planet-friendly vehicle, the hydrogen car, has yet to catch on for a few different reasons. Now, a new technique developed by researchers at Rice University in Texas may provide the key to making hydrogen cars and hydrogen fuel as a whole more viable. But how does this relate to plastic, brother? Hydrogen is incredibly attractive as an alternative fuel to gas and oil. It is a storable fuel that produces no planet overheating pollution when used. The problem has been, however, is that it produces a whole lot of planet overheating pollution when it is made. The process is also extremely expensive, putting current hydrogen cars out of reach for everyone but the very wealthy. The Rice research team may have solved that problem by developing a technique that transforms plastic waste into a usable hydrogen fuel without the massive pollution produced by traditional methods. Not only would this provide hydrogen fuel that is good for the planet, but it would also provide a use for some of the mountains of plastic waste our society generates regularly. To quote one of the writers of this article, I hope that this work will allow for the production of clean hydrogen from waste plastics, possibly solving the environmental problem like plastic pollution and greenhouse gas. Intensive production of hydrogen by steam methane reforming, or rather hydrogen by steam methane reforming is what the process is, according to Kevin Weiss, who is the lead author of the study. Mr. Weiss also laid out how the process simultaneously creates graphene and hydrogen, making it incredibly cost effective. If the produced graphene is sold at only 5% of the current market value, a 95% off sale, clean hydrogen could be produced for free, according to Mr. Weiss. Our attempts to produce clean hydrogen, including a facility in Texas that uses wind and solar energy to create the hydrogen fuel from water. However, considering how scarce clean water is becoming and how much plastic waste is soaring, this new method sounds even more incredibly promising. With that said, is there a solution to the plastic problem? This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, we have to take a very short commercial break. And let's see, we will be right back. But hold on, they're telling me now that I got to stretch it out for a few moments, so let's stretch it out.
This is the DJ Skate Cool Smash.
How's it going?
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to take another trip back to Harvard University, the top Harvard cancer researchers accused of scientific fraud, a scientific fraud which has affected 37 studies nationwide. The Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, an affiliate of Harvard Medical School, is seeking to retract 6 scientific studies and correct 31 others that were published by the Institute's top researchers, including its CEO. Essentially, they lied. The researchers are accused of manipulating data images with simple methods, primarily with copy and paste in images, editing software such as Adobe Photoshop. The accusations come from data sleuth Sholto David and his colleagues on PubPeer, an online forum for researchers to discuss publications that has frequently served to spot dubious research and potential fraud. On January 2nd of this year, David posted on his Research Integrity blog, for better science, a long list of potential data manipulations from DFCI researchers. The post highlighted many data figures that appeared to contain pixel-for-pixel duplications. The alleged manipulated images are out of data such as Western blots, which are used to detect and visualize the presence of proteins in complex mixtures. DFCI Research Integrity Officer Barrett Rollins told the Harvard Crimson that David had contacted DFCI with allegations of data manipulation in 57 DFCI-led studies. Rollins said that the Institute is committed to a culture of accountability and integrity, and that every inquiry about research integrity is examined fully. The allegations are against DFCI President and CEO Lori Glimcrist, Executive Vice President and COO William Hahn, Senior Vice President for Experimental Medicine Irene Gabriel, and Harvard Medical School Professor Kenneth Anderson. the Wall Street Journal noted that Rollins, the integrity officer, is also a co-author on two of the studies impacted by this facetious and fallacious research. He told the outlet he is recused from decisions involving those studies. Amid the Institute's internal review, Rollins said the Institute identified 38 studies in which DFCI researchers are primarily responsible for potential research manipulation. The Institute is seeking retractions of 6 studies and is contacting scientific publishers to correct 31 others, totaling 37 studies. These are studies that impact people's lives, brothers and sisters. Amid the Institute's internal review, Rollins said the Institute identified 38 studies specifically. Of the remaining 19 studies identified, David, 3 were cleared of manipulation allegations, and 16 were determined to have had data in question collected at labs outside of DFCI. Those studies are still under investigation, according to Mr. Rollins. Where possible, the heads of all other laboratories have been contacted, and we will work with them to see that they correct the literature as warranted, Mr. Rollins wrote in a statement. Despite finding false data and manipulated images, Rollins pressed that it doesn't necessarily mean that scientific misconduct occurred. Really? And the Institute has not yet managed such a determination. Well, the people of America, the people of the world, demand unrequited, irrefutable evidence when it comes to cancer research, because that research affects the lives and the medication that people who suffer from that dastardly disease, where the body goes to war against itself, and you manipulate that data and the slides that you take and images that you take of the cancer cells dictate what doctors do. So you can't say that there was no scientific misconduct. They lied, and they must be held accountable. The presence of image discrepancies in a paper is not evidence of an officer's intent to deceive, Mr. Rollins said, but it is deception, is it not? That conclusion can only be drawn after a careful fact-based examination, which is an integral part of our response. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, eats like a duck, looks like a duck, got fatty, greasy tissue like a duck, when you cook it, guess what? It's not a toad, and it ain't frog legs. Their experiences is that errors are often unintentional and do not rise to the level of misconduct, which is why 5 primary individuals, the CEO specifically, the head of the department at Harvard, and others have been challenged and removed from their positions because it wasn't an intentional level of misconduct. Really? If they were students and you presented this as a paper, you would throw them out of school for plagiarism and fraud. The very simple methods used to manipulate the DFCI data are remarkably common among falsified scientific studies. However, data sleuths have gotten better and better at spotting such lazy manipulations, including the copy and pasted duplicates that are sometimes related and adjusted for size, brightness, and contrast. As ARS, ARS Publications, recently reported, all journals from the publisher Science Now use an AI-powered tool to spot just this kind of image recycling because it has become so common. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I'm not finished with these suckers just yet. Some scientists say they found a switch that stops immune system attacking healthy cells. Oh, cancer. When your immune system attacks healthy cells, eats them, and kills them, that is defined as cancer. But instead of dealing with the causes that tell the body to do that, you look to chemically tell the body to just turn it off. But you don't provide a cure. Our immune system is talented. It is designed at telling the difference between the chemistry of our own body and that of an invading pathogen. When it malfunctions, and it doesn't malfunction, something that you're doing and have introduced into the body has tricked the immune system by design, which causes the cancer. When it malfunctions, our body can become host to an intensive civil war. Scientists are keen to understand this in more detail, and a newly identified hormonal switch, cellular switch, genetic switch that deactivates a sensor of foreign DNA may provide important insights. A key to this discovery made by a team from Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne is an enzyme called cyclic GMP, AMP synthase, or CGAS, CGAS. This protein is tasked with identifying infiltrating viruses. It binds to any foreign DNA floating out of place in a cell's gooey cytoplasm and triggers a reaction alerting the body to an invader. We already know that CGAS needs to be tightly regulated to keep it in check, especially once it enters a cell's nucleus. The new study identifies a biological switch that marks the enzyme for deletion in places where no immune response is required. Along with previously defined interactions, the nucleosomes, our results provide a complete structural model of the nuclear regulation of CGAS, according to the researchers of this published paper. Scientists have established that all cells divide to grow. The nuclear envelope dissolves, giving the CGAS, CGAS, easy access to the DNA bundle within. There it binds to DNA, to the DNA packaging units called nucleosomes, and is covered by a protein called BAF, B-A-F, waiting for when it might be needed. In this study, via a detailed analysis of cells grown in the lab, the team identified a protein complex named CRL5-SPSB3. That'll be the last acronym I bring up, believe me. It adds a chemical called ubiquitin to the sea gas to mark it as disposable. This is the key switch that kills off the sea gas when it's not needed, when there's no threat from foreign DNA. Essentially, it stops the enzyme from attacking healthy cells by gently ushering it out of the picture of the cell's growth. Part of the signaling that controls the immune system response is called the interferon. And for those who know what I'm talking about, the IB100, which is interferon, keyword interfere, or IFN pathway, and the study showed how both sea gas and CRL5-SPSB3, which are responsible for flicking the switch on one way or the other, are involved in the IFN. But if you're using the IB100, this issue doesn't exist. It puts everything back in balance because it is a natural-based interferon. These results demonstrate that nuclear sea gas levels affect the cellular IFN tone and reveal a role for the CRL5-SPSB3 in cells' intrinsic immunity, according to the researchers. Autoimmune disorders such as type 1 diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, arthritis, bursitis, tendinitis, the flu, the common cold, hell, even COVID. These are autoimmune disorders. Happen when the immune system controls don't function as they should. The new research highlights one of these controls as worth studying further. Now that we know more about how sea gas works, we might be able to develop effective ways of ensuring it's always well behaved. Our research defines protein degeneration as a detriment of sea gas regulations in the nucleus and provides structural insight into an element of sea gas that is amenable to therapeutic exploitation, according to the researchers. This research has been published in Nature magazine. And this is Not So Mad Science, with a wonderful case for why IB100, the natural interferon, is essential for proper health and balance of the immune system in the body. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I think I've used up enough of your time. I have plenty more material to go over, but I think the other material I have coming up will only pull away from the intrinsic value of what we've already touched on. So to that end, I'm going to close out this edition of Not So Mad Science with a piece from Stevie Wonder called Black Orchid. It is a most rare flower, but as it is such a rare flower, it is an awesomely beautiful flower. And we, as the black man and woman who come with the earth, from the earth we come, to the earth we shall return, it is appropriate. Mm-hmm.
of love and fear of pain, a rushing wind that's fast away, for the promises of rain. A pearl of wisdom entrapped by poverty, she gives love with purity, minds with hope for schemes to build worlds enhanced by peace. Draped in sparkling morning dew, she expresses life anew from the earth beneath her feet. She is a flower that grows of ability, femininity. Black orchid, black orchid, why did they make you begin? When they know in time you'll find your truth before your cycle ends.
As we close out this edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network, I want to leave you, as I came before you, with the words of greetings of peace and paradise of Assalamu Alaikum. I remind us all of those immortal words of the late, great black preacher of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, Reverend Dr. Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. Our time is now.